As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. It's a magazine you don't have to feel obligated to buy from your nephew's fundraiser. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, free on your radio. Now. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Happy Saturday. It is Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Annis alongside John Gregg, Mike Johnson this week. Plenty to get to in the next couple of hours. We will talk Vander Kane taking his tracksuit across the continent. Raptors now at the All-Star break, three-game winning streak, and on pace for their best season ever in the All-Star weekend, underway yesterday with the Rising Stars Challenge. And Kevin Hart taking home another MVP trophy in the celebrity game. And we will get to a bunch of things, including Tiger Woods taking a leave of absence from the PGA Tour until he learns how to play golf again. And the CFL, because Mikey J's in studio. We got to talk CFL because they're going to open the season in Fort McMurray are the Argos.
It's a home game, folks. A home game.
Yeah, sure it is. And that's a plum assignment if you get to cover that game. Bring your coat, I guess. I don't know. I've never been, but apparently interesting place. But we will start with your Toronto Maple Leafs, who are doing well in this tanking thing, gents. Yesterday was a good day. They didn't play, but they were leapfrogged by Columbus with their 2 points yesterday. So now the Maple Leafs sitting in fifth worst in the National Hockey League, zoning in on one of those bottom three spots. They're now just 5 points up on the Carolina Hurricanes for third worst, and the Canes have 3 games in hand. They're single digits.
Go Canes.
Right? They're single digits to the Edmonton Oilers now for second overall and second most ping pong balls. This is, I mean, I kid, John, but this is great for the Maple Leafs, right? All these losses.
I think it's the only way you can go. I mean, I've said it before, I'll say it again. We are in the midst of a 10-year rebuild here, and it might take 15, but doesn't get any better than high draft picks when you're trying to do that. So keep losing, boys. Keep losing.
The great thing is, too, they're tanking organically. Like, they haven't shipped anybody out of town yet. They're doing it just because they're not playing well.
They just suck.
Yeah. And if you look at the Sabres, they've made a few moves. It's like, all right, we're doing all we can to get as low in the standings as possible. The Leafs and the Oilers, to some extent as well, are totally tanking organically, and that's a little different than in past seasons.
Yeah, I mean, Tim Murray has done an excellent job in Buffalo of planning a tank. He's got players down there and a coach who's fiery, and he's got players who don't want to lose, but they're just simply not good enough. And, you know, that's what you need to do to ensure generational talent like Connor McDavid or even Jack Eichel's on your team, and you're set for, you know, 10 or 15 years to come.
Well, the Sabres are like in a secret society of suck, right? Like they're like the stonecutters of tanking. Nobody's getting into that club, right? Like they almost don't need to do anything more to secure that number one spot with the most ping pong balls. But right now, Maple Leafs sitting, if the season ended right now, they'd have an 8.5% chance at the number one overall pick, and they could drop just as low as sixth overall in the NHL draft. But I think the big news this week, gents, was the Cahal Kelly piece, and not surprising, I guess, but somebody actually came out and said it, that yes, okay, Brendan Shanahan used the first 50 or so games of the season to evaluate and just make sure of what he already thought, that this team's just not good enough, and it's time to just tear it all apart, go right down to the wood, start from scratch. And we've heard this. It's not the first time we've heard this, right? It was supposed to be a longer-term plan for Brian Burke back in 2008, and he got impatient, traded away. It's hard to have a rebuild when you're trading away first-round picks. We've heard this, and Damian Cox, good story on Sportsnet.ca as well, about, you know, even going back 30-some-odd years ago, this team talked about rebuilding and trading away and getting rid of older veterans and going younger, and it didn't end up happening. Why should we believe him this time, Mike?
I don't know that you necessarily have to believe him, because none of this will matter if they... I don't know how to word this. When you start talking about the Leafs, you just get... There's so many things they could, they can, and should do. For me, it just comes down to the simple things. Starting to do the simple things well. Because for years, and I'm talking about player development and drafting good players, and it has to start there. Yes, your chances of drafting better players, if you have better picks, are going to increase naturally, but... If you look historically, just even the last decade, the Leafs can't draft players in the mid rounds that end up getting into their lineup. They either give up on a player too quickly, and or that player just simply doesn't turn into a quality NHLer. And the one bad thing about this rebuild, this tear it all down, now being out in the public, I think everyone kind of knew that the Leafs needed to go in a different direction, based on what's happened in the last couple months. But you're sending a message to your players that, and prospective players that might want to sign here one day, that if you don't get it done, we're just going to give up on you. We're not going to let you develop into a good player, like we've seen with Alex Steen and others. That, you know, sometimes the Leafs have been impatient too quickly. You have to let certain players develop, and a total rebuild doesn't guarantee that those elements of the organization are going to change.
I think, though, Mike, that's the one positive legacy we've got from Brian Burke in this city, is that the Leafs under him, and largely due to a salary cap on their NHL roster, have put many more resources into player development. We're seeing kind of some of that come to fruition a little bit. Just, you know, even just last year, when you're calling up Marlies last year, Corbinian, Holzer, guys like that, you know, they're stepping in and they can play a role. They're playing the system. They are not complete scrubs. And that's a testament to what's going on from the top down in this organization. But you're right in that they haven't been able to draft high enough to get those top end players and develop them. But I do think that is changing, and that's coming. And, you know, a teardown and more draft picks and more young players in the system will only help this team in the long run.
So, yeah, the report is it's going to be another, I mean, I hate this term, 3 to 5 year rebuild, right?
Who cares? We're in a 10-year rebuild.
Right. Imagine this had actually happened, 5 years ago, where the Maple Leafs would be at this point. But it is supposedly happening as we approach the trade deadline. So it opens up the conversation as to who is going to be on the move, right? And you look at some of the core players on this team, they're not old, right? We're not talking about 35-year-olds. We're talking about 25, 26-year-olds. We're talking about Phil Kessel, James Van Riemsdyk, and then you go younger than that, Nazem Kadri, obviously Morgan Riley's part of that. I mean, if there is an untouchable, and I'm not sure that there is, he would probably be in that group. But, all right, maybe... Kessel's the guy to start with, right? Because he's been so polarizing his entire Maple Leafs career. And, you know, in 5 minutes of the game against the Rangers the other night, he was -3. It's incredible. Moved down to the fourth line, not talking to the media again. Finally did talk to the media, was open to being moved. Is he a guy, John, that you see moved by the deadline? Is that an off-season thing? Is it possible, though, that he is around for this team and its rebuild?
I don't think he's around for a rebuild. I also think it's tough to move a guy like that before the deadline. In the offseason, when teams have an extra 10% on their cap that they can go over, it's a lot easier to pick up a guy with, you know, a $7 or $8 million price tag. And if you look around the league, there aren't a lot of teams that can afford to bring that kind of player in and not, you know, sacrifice depth on their roster as it is. You're probably going to want to trade him out of the East because you don't want him to come back and bite you.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look at some West teams, I mean, Nashville could afford a guy like that, and they don't have the game breaker. I mean, Philip Forsberg's been nice, and James Neal and Mike Ribeiro are playing well, but they're not, you know, 40-goal guys. At least, you know, Neal's not anymore. Calgary, the Flames, can they use a player like that? Sure thing. I mean, and then even Winnipeg, they still don't have, I mean, they just traded away Evander Kane, who wasn't going to help them for the rest of the year. They don't have a game breaker. Those are three teams out west that could probably use a forward like Kessel who could afford to bring that contract on. And they have some nice pieces too. I mean, if I'm Dave Nonis or Brendan Shannon or whoever, I'm going to those teams and looking at names like, you know, Seth Jones and Kevin Fiala in Nashville, or is Tyler Myers still available in Winnipeg? Because that was a question that was raised, is did they pick him up to flip him? Josh Morrissey, Nick Pétain, we saw what those guys did at the WJC. There are exciting players out there if you're willing to, again, take the time to develop them.
And those three teams in particular also, they have GMs that are willing to make a big move. You just saw what Kevin Cheveldayoff did in getting rid of Evander Kane. Brian Burke, no stranger to making big moves. Dave Poile in Nashville, he has said in the last few years that they're willing to spend to the cap if they feel that they, you know, can get a piece that will help them for years. So those three are definitely good options for Kessel. There's no way he gets traded before the trade deadline. It's too complicated. Like you said, when the Leafs know where they pick in the draft, that will also determine the type of moves they make. Because as of right now, they have a 7.5% chance. It's very slim. But let's say a miracle happens in this city.
It's not that slim, though, honestly. When you look at the 30th place team gets a 20% chance.
Guys, I just ran the NFL lottery or the NHL lottery simulator 100 times while we sat here. The Leafs got the first overall pick on 12 of those occasions.
So that's not bad.
That's not bad at all.
The other teams, Carolina, Edmonton, got 16 and Buffalo 15. So they're not that far behind, according to the all-powerful lottery simulator.
So let's say a miracle happens if you're a Leafs fan and they win the lottery, like literally, and they get McDavid. That puts a whole new layer on this whole rebuild thing.
Oh, sure.
That speeds it up significantly, and that would also determine what Nonis or whoever the GM might be, who knows what's going to happen there, that determines what they do with Phil Kessel and with big contracts like Dion Phaneuf or Joffrey Loupe.
You can't trade Joffrey Loupe.
No, he's one of those guys. Same with JVR. You shouldn't move those guys.
No, I mean,
guys.
He's unmovable. The guy
in the same sense,
glass.
Clarkson is, yeah.
He's a piece of fine china. Like, you need to hire professional movers to wrap him in bubble tape if you're going to move him.
Yeah, I mean, it sucks because when he plays, he's a heart and soul type guy who's got some top-end skill, but he can't stay healthy for any kind of long stretch, and no team wants, you know, a $5 million cap hit on the IR.
Literally, he can't move or else all his bones break. Like, he has boneitis. It's a shame, but yes, we feel for you, Joffrey Loupe. Just a little bit, though. Good-looking guy making, $5 million. We don't feel that bad for you, but yeah.
But here's the question, though. Sorry, Mike. And if you're going to trade Phil Kessel, if you have decided that Phil Kessel is not a player that you want on your team in the long term, are you going to move him are you demanding lots of pieces, or are you happy to get and meh kind of return, but you get that money off your cap and allows you flexibility to make other moves? You go out and you can maybe make a trade for two or three guys who can add to your depth for that kind of money.
It really depends on your trade partner, right? Because you're going to, if you are taking salary back, you're going to get more in terms of roster talent. But if a team's willing, we'll take Phil's salary off the books, but we're not going to give you as much back.
But what are you looking for, right? Are you looking to just jettison these guys who are overpriced and who are anchors on your cap, or are you looking for big return for them?
I think it's a different, when you're talking about Phil Kessel, it's a different conversation than Dion Phaneuf, right? Like, I think Phaneuf does fall in that category of just get that number off our books, but Phil Kessel is still a commodity, right? Like, we're talking about a perennial 30-goal scorer that doesn't grow on trees.
I agree. I mean, he's the third highest scoring player in the NHL over the past 3 years.
Right.
He's nearly a point per game guy in the playoffs. You know, for all his warts, Phil Kessel does what Phil Kessel is supposed to do, which is score goals in bunches and a lot of them per year.
And that's one reason why it could be a huge mistake to trade a guy like Phil Kessel. Even though you're in a rebuild, Kessel's still in his prime. You're going to need guys that score goals. And with Kessel, it's more.
But you might win a game.
What if you don't trade Phil? What if you don't move Phil Kessel and then you can't afford Steven Stamkos? What if that happens?
Oh, we're still on that.
Hey, why not? He's not signed. I'm just saying he's said in the past, you know, he's hinted at the idea,
sure.
You know, what if you can go out and drop $10 million a year on Stamkos that he basically can't refuse you?
Yeah.
But you can't do it because you're stuck with Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf.
I don't know why the Lightning wouldn't do it, though, too. And I think that conversation kind of flipped at the All-Star break with the comments, don't you think?
Yeah. No, I'm not saying it's a reality. I'm saying it allows that, you know, reality to be a possibility, at least, even if it's, you know, even if we're in bizarro world, even if Stamkos is like, look, he's looking at his Tampa Bay team and thinks we're pretty damn good and we're young, we're going to be good for a while. You don't want to have these numbers on your cap when guys like that come around, you know?
Yeah, that's the difficult part of it. Not only are they fifth worst in the NHL, they're a cap team, which is unbelievable. You look at it, Nashville Predators, they're still $10 million under the cap for this year. So it's, I mean, you're...
Now, they're going to have to pay some guys in the next couple of years, for sure. But you're right. I mean, you can't be the fifth worst team in the league and be capped out. It just doesn't compute.
And those teams that are going to be in the market for a Dion Phaneuf, for a Phil Kessel, are likely going to be close to cap teams as well, which means you're likely going to have to take a bad contract back, right?
I don't know. You know where I'm looking if I'm trying to trade Phaneuf is the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah.
Desperate for defense, for some depth there. They've got, you know, some interesting young players. Shea Theodore, we saw him at the World Junior Championship as well. Plays for the Seattle Thunderbirds out west. He is looking like he could be really, really good. And
they have $5 million in cap space too, somehow.
Yeah, they've got it. They've got space.
And,
you know,
and after this season, you know, it depends on what they do with Boschman, but Eric Brewer, Sheldon Surrey, Brizgalov, all that money is going to be coming off the cap.
Yep.
So Bob Murray has a he'll have a pretty good cushion. He'll be able to make a big move or two.
Sure. What, and you know, guys like Emerson Edom, you know,
Matt
Devontae Smith-Pelly, Matt Bolesky's up for a new deal. I mean, these are, you know, the younger kind of guys who you don't really know what you're going to get with them, but would you rather have two or three of those guys instead of one anchor on your cap? And I mean, if you can get a top end prospect like Theodore for a Phaneuf, I say you go to town.
This is Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Mike Johnson. Before we go back into this, and I want to talk about Dave Nonis, conspiracy theory. We talked about the McDavid lottery, and I know, Gregg, you've been hitting that the simulator over and over again.
Every day, it's all I do.
Do we believe in the frozen envelope, right? Like, if there ever was a test case for it, I don't know. I'm of two minds, right? Because Rogers in the NHL with the $5.2 billion deal, it would be a nice, you know, wink wink to Toronto to freeze the envelope for McDavid.
You're gonna get fired, Ben. You keep this up.
I think that's like number 20 on the list of reasons I'm going to get fired. Do we believe in that? Like, I kind of do. Like, we don't see the ping pong balls bouncing around, which is always a very curious thing. Why don't they show us the actual ping pong balls coming out of the machine? It's just an envelope, right? Like, it would be so easy to fix if it was fixed. Do we believe that?
I don't believe it. I think in a perfect world, you end up with, you know, Connor McDavid in Toronto and Jack Eichel in Buffalo, and isn't that great for the league? And, you know, it's not the friggin' Carolina Hurricanes who end up with one of these franchise players. But I honestly, I don't think that the league is rigging anything like that. Can you imagine if that happened and it got out?
The league would lose all credibility. You couldn't take something like that seriously.
Do we believe the Patrick Ewing draft was rigged? Do we believe in the frozen envelope stuff?
I believe the NBA will rig whatever they want. But yeah, the NHL, come on.
Nothing's come out definitively about that, right? It's just innuendo and hearsay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you are smart enough about it, maybe you can cover it up. Maybe it's just wishful thinking.
You know, 05, right? Or 04, sorry, with Crosby going to Pittsburgh.
Sure.
There's a team that was desperately in need of some new exciting blood and obviously a franchise player. I mean, JVR goes number two to Philly. They need, you know, they bought him out in 1 year and all of a sudden they've got the guy who's considered the second best player in the draft. You know, the conspiracies are out there, but I have a hard time believing that any, you know, in this day and age of 24/7 media and stuff, I would argue that leagues aren't in the game of rigging things.
So you think Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone?
No, but I think if there was Twitter and Facebook, it might have been a different story.
Definitely. No question about it. All right. So we approached the trade deadline here beginning in March 2nd. And we all agree there's going to be a bunch of guys cast overboard. Winnick, Santarelli, those guys are as good as gone because they're on manageable deals and they can
and they're the Leafs' best players.
Right.
Right? Like, as really sad as it is, they're like, you know, maybe they're not, you know, traditional stats-wise, they're not going to be 30-goal guys, but those are the guys who have stepped up consistently all season long and helped this team and excelled in the roles that they were brought in to fill, right?
Mike Santarelli, all season, consistently, from a consistency standpoint, has been the best Toronto Maple Leafs player. Really?
Yeah.
And no offense to Mr. Santarelli, but if Mike Santarelli on a one-year, $1.5 million contract is your best player, that's not a good sign.
No.
But and it is. It's very frustrating if you are a Leafs fan that three of your best players in Franz and Santarelli and Winnick are the guys that are most likely going to have to be traded by the deadline.
But it's not, though, because you move those guys out, it kills your depth. It kills your penalty kill, and it means
it will
that
help with
even
the,
though you can't get Kessel and Funafe out the door before the draft, you're going to lose more, right? And I, you know, I hate to say it to everybody, but that's what you should be hoping for right now.
Oh, don't dance around the fact. Come on, just with open arms, accept this, John. Losing is absolutely what this Maple Leafs team should be doing. And I don't know, we have to talk about, you know, like in we have to be careful of everybody's baby ears when we talk about losing on purpose. Like, this is not, it shouldn't even be a controversy. It shouldn't be a controversial subject. Like, there's no question that that's in the best interest of this franchise to lose games. So I don't agree with the system. Honestly, I don't. Like, draft lotteries, I don't agree with it. Why should you be rewarded for your incompetence? But it's the system
operate. What do you mean? What would you do? Free agents for, like, NHL draft players or eligible players or free agents?
In my perfect world, and, you know, this would be great for the Toronto Maple Leafs, although they still managed to screw it up. Go European system, no draft. You got the money, you get the player.
But you still have a cap,
no,
right?
No cap. No cap.
Oh, man, you're flipping the script. Okay.
Yeah, go, you know, why so can't the Maple Leafs be the Manchester United of the NHL?
So then we
NHL?
End up with the Detroit Red Wings winning every year, the Maple Leafs trying to win every year and screwing it up like they did for, you know, all of the early 2000s.
Sure. But why do, you know, if you don't want to spend the money, you know, you can still, in Major League Baseball, no salary cap. Tampa Bay Rays have been a pretty competitive club over the last decade.
Yep.
Do you not agree?
Yep.
You know,
like, that's player development.
Right? You
high
have to be
picks.
Smart. Be smart about it. But instead, no, you know, everybody, especially south of the border, likes to think of themselves as a free market society, and our sporting systems are very, very left-wing leaning.
Hey, Ben, in my mind, you know, if you want to do scrap the draft and have all of those 17- and 18-year-old kids be free agents, I think it's a great idea. I say you keep the cap. I say, you know, you still have a rookie salary cap, right? But you can offer Connor McDavid $5 million a year to come play for your team. Not every team can do that because they're capped out.
Maple Leafs can't.
Maple Leafs can't unless they move Dion Phaneuf.
Right.
But, I mean, I like the idea of, you know, slotting guys and having a free agency period for those kids. Like, I agree the draft is kind of wonky, especially now that you can finish, you know, 14th last and still have a shot at the first overall pick. You know, God forbid the LA Kings get Connor McDavid or something like that. I mean, and that's been a possibility. You know, they're winning games recently.
Why is that so
recently,
bad? But like, what, like, I that's the example everybody uses. Why is that, like, the worst thing in the world?
That's not the worst. It's the LA Kings, so it's a big market, so it's a good place to have a guy like that. I mean, it's better than Carolina. It's better than Miami. It's better than, you know, Scottsdale. But it would just be a shame if a team like Buffalo didn't get a top pick after engineering this, you know?
If you compare the NHL to other leagues, the major four, you know, sports leagues, the NHL has the best parity among those, that, you know.
Totally disagree.
Really?
110%. Like, you look at Major League Baseball, without a salary cap, the number of different World Series winners, the Kansas City Royals of the worlds that keep happening year after year, absolutely disagree. Like, we're looking at a Maple Leafs team that's been in a cycle of suckitude for, you know, a couple of decades here now. No, I totally disagree.
With the salary cap system, though, the any team, you know, so I think from a fan's perspective, they get upset at the thought of an LA Kings getting a Connor McDavid because LA should already be a good team. LA, even though they're out of the playoff picture right now, fans view LA as a very good hockey team, and they think, oh, that's unfair. You can't just give that. And then other teams are struggling, like the Oilers and Leafs and Sabres.
Because you're a commie. You're a commie. You want everybody. You want to spread it around. You just want to spread it around. If you suck, oh, we'll make you better because you're so incompetent. You can't operate a hockey team. Here, take this good player.
No, I'm a open. I'm a free market kind of guy. I'm a capitalist. 100%.
Seriously, he is.
I am. but in the NHL, in today's NHL, it doesn't work like that, right?
Yeah.
That's
exactly why you should continue to lose and why everybody needs to be so uptight about talking about it, losing on purpose and throwing games. Like, this is the society. This is the system we're operating in. Like, don't be embarrassed about it. If you're embarrassed about it, change the system. This is the system we're working
on. The thing with tanking, some people have a misconception that, like, the word tanking is somehow attached to the players, and that's always unfair. To ignore the fact that management's that ownership want to tank, of course they do. The Brendan Shanahan doesn't want the Leafs to win a bunch of games in regulation over the next couple months. But, yeah, I don't know.
You're never going to get, I mean, it's been said 100 times or 1,000,000 times. You're never going to get players and coaches to tank. I mean, they...
No, it's unfair to the players. They're competitors.
All you do is engineer your team, like Tim Murray has done in Buffalo, and make sure that it's just simply not talented enough to win enough hockey games.
Right, but that trickles down. But if you know you don't have the talent, like, you get the first two periods against the Rangers, right? Like, you get lackluster efforts because, you know, players understand. They look up to the press box and they see Brendan Shanahan orchestrating their demise, and they're like, why should we give an S-O-meter? Why should we crank it up to 11 on the give an S-O-meter?
Because players are still individual corporations. They're still playing for their next contract. They're still playing.
Yeah, but if you're Phil Kessel and you're making your $9 million a year, what do you care?
Right, but and that's why you want to get Phil Kessel out of town.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
because
it's a good test period to see which players do we want. If you looked at the way Morgan Riley's been playing, you can't say that guy's given up on the season. He's playing some outstanding hockey.
No, he's probably seeing an opportunity.
Exactly.
Right? Dion Phaneuf is out. Morgan Riley gets more ice time, and he gets to stay as a Toronto Maple Leaf and be part of a great rebuild.
So it's the perfect time of season to separate. It's a great time for Leafs management to really see, okay, who do we want? That's why they're still trying to re-sign Mike Santorelli. That's why talks are still ongoing, is because, like, okay, we want that type of player on our team. And so this is a great time of the season to really see the distinction between the two types of players the Leafs have.
And plus, Mike Santorelli is not going to offer enough wins to this team to cause any problems in a rebuild. He's a good character guy. He plays a role well. He's not going to be the guy who's, you know, out there scoring oodles of points and ruining your rebuild by taking you out of the low end of the lottery, right? But yeah, I mean, I think, I think the Leafs, there are a couple untouchables. Morgan Riley is one of them. Everybody else, you know, I would argue Jonathan Bernier, you don't trade, but everybody else is on the block and ready to go.
I want to continue this conversation. We'll also get to the Evander Kane deal coming up after the break. I also want to touch on whether you're looking at Dave Nonis as a lame duck GM and whether he is the man you want at the helm here as the Maple Leafs make a couple of moves here to cut it down to the wood and continue their pursuit of Connor McDavid. All that and more coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Grigg and Mike Johnston on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Evan Rosser.
Nick Vieira has been shot. He's been stabbed. He's caught piles of falling rock with the top of his head. He's mapped underground sand dunes in China, rafted across buried lakes in France, and scaled cliffs on horseback in the Peruvian Amazon. He's slept in his sky-blue Jeep Cherokee through 5 Canadian winters, shivering until sunup on nights where the temperature dropped as low as minus 40, and stepped back into the light after spending 2 weeks camped underground in Mexico's Sierra Juarez Mountains. He's operated a trap line in northern Alberta and scaled a cliff through the set of The Bourne Legacy. He didn't see Jeremy Renner. He's almost drowned in a flooded tunnel of rock more than a kilometer into the belly of a mountain, and he knows how many dead sheep you can fit in the back of a Ford Escort. Who is Nick Vieira, the Canadian cave explorer who headlines our Playing on the Edge package.
This story and more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet magazine, available on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand.
Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network, I'm Ben Annis alongside Mike Johnson and John Gregg. So the Maple Leafs teardown is imminent, we expect.
We hope.
We hope. The losing continues. I don't know if you want to mess with this chemistry, this losing chemistry, though, right? Like, that's part
great,
of it.
Great losing chemistry.
Yeah.
I don't know. It might be addition by subtraction, which would be a problem. That would be no good.
Well, if you move the right guys, you can bring up some Marlies who are also, I believe, in second last in their division.
Okay,
so it's not there's not a wealth of talent down there, despite what I was saying earlier about player development. They're all the good players from the Marlies are now either with the Leafs or have moved on somewhere else.
So that's good. It's all positive news for the Toronto Maple Leafs. All right, so we're going to continue the conversation about the Leafs for a second. We'll try to get to the Evander Kane stuff in just a second. But before the break, I was mentioning the Dave Nonis, whether he's a lame duck GM, whether he will be the GM of this team going forward. They've surrounded him with a bunch of AGMs, Kyle Dubas, and now Mark Hunter is a big part of this organization. He's been overseas a whole bunch in the last few weeks, scouting players, and we know his history with junior hockey and how great a talent evaluator he appears to be. And there are reports, or at least speculation, that he could be the next GM of this team. Some important decisions, important moves coming up in, I guess, the next couple of weeks and certainly going forward to the off season. John, are you comfortable with Dave Nonis being the guy to take this team through the next phase of its development?
I have no problem with it. If he's got a mandate from above to tear this team down and start a rebuild, he's as able to do it as anybody else. I mean, he doesn't have a huge history of making big trades, but this is the guy who got Roberto Luongo for, you know, Todd Bertuzzi and Alex Auld and Brian Allen out of Florida, and he changed the fortune of the Vancouver Canucks with that move. If he can do kind of the reverse here and get some picks and some young players and some, you know, nice depth pieces for a couple of the bigger names, I mean, I think he can do it. I don't see why he wouldn't. It's not like he has a lot invested in this awesome team that he built where he doesn't want to tear it apart. I mean, if anything, he can go out on a high note with a legacy of having started something that's never really been done in this town.
Do you expect him to be the guy? Like, is this it for him? Is this his swan song?
I think we've seen a pattern this year with Brendan Shanahan. I think we've seen he gave the coach and the team 40 games to work with each other. It wasn't working, so he jettisoned the coach to see what he would have under another coach. Obviously, that hasn't gone very well. I think he's making decisions on the guys on the roster and seeing that he doesn't have the pieces that he needs to build a winner long term. And I don't think, as long as he's pulling the strings, even if he's not actually making the phone calls, I don't see why it's a problem to have Dave Nonis do it. But no, I don't think Dave Nonis is here next year. I think Shanny is setting the stage for an entire organizational revamp.
If the Leafs were going to get rid of Nonis, why? I've said this before. Why wouldn't they just get rid of him when they got rid of Carlisle?
Sure.
But who's out there that can jump in that you want long term as your GM? Like, don't you want the summer to be able to go to other teams and say, we'd like to get the, you know, you're not going to get Jim Neal out of Dallas, but that kind of like assistant GM who's out there who maybe is under contract and you're not going to be able to pry him away during the season.
What's going to happen is exactly what you just said, is for the rest of this season and possibly leading up to the draft, it's going to be a test period for Nonis. Sometimes, you know, if NHL GMs were fired based on signing a contract like David Clarkson's, the turnover among NHL GMs would be a monthly thing. So, you know, Dave Nonis, you can't take Garceau in with the Islanders for a second. I just said this off air, but he has made some of the worst contracts in NHL history. But look at the Islanders today. A GM can make up for a bad signing with a great trade or with another good signing. And Dave Nonis has shown he's capable of of both things. He can, you know, Stefan Robidas' contract isn't great. Clarkson, we all know. But he's proven that he can make these little moves.
So you think he's around then next year?
If you're going to have him at the draft, he's going to be there.
I don't think they are.
You think at the end of the season?
I don't even think you need a GM in place at the draft. Like, I think you've built your scouting department. You've got your AGMs. You've got Ben, like you were saying, Mark Hunter. You know, maybe nobody knows junior hockey in this city as well as he does, or at least, sorry, nobody within the organization has been a junior hockey guru like he is.
Yeah.
You don't need a GM at the draft, especially if you're willing to pull some strings and make some trades yourself.
You got to hire a coach first before the GM, though, right? Everybody knows that's how it works. And then the GM comes in and hates his coach.
Any GM who comes in is going to want to hire his own coach. So
are they actually going to do that finally for once?
Well,
have the GM hire his own coach? Think,
or maybe the coach wants to be the GM. Hello, Mike Babcock.
Oh, that's interesting. So there's a lot of intrigue going forward for this team. If you're gonna stink, like, don't be that bubble playoff team. I think this is more exciting in this city to see this team flounder like they are, as opposed to being that 8th, 9th, 10th team in the National Hockey League.
Recent history has shown you can't be that team and build long term. You have to draft or build through the draft.
Yeah.
And make smart trades and make smart signings of the kinds of guys who are out there, which are not the superstars. Those are the guys you have to get through the draft.
So maybe it's going to be an interesting trade deadline, which is kind of, you know, it's waned in the last couple of years. Hasn't been as thrilling, but maybe this is one of those years. And it's already started. First really good hockey trade with a bunch of big names being thrown around in the Evander Kane deal. February 11th, Jets traded Kane with Jason Kasdorf and Zach Bogosian to the Sabres for Joel Armia, Tyler Myers, Drew Stafford, Brendan Lemieux, and a first-round pick in the 2015 draft. I guess firstly, it's still fresh, right? Just 3 days ago. What do we make overall of this deal? Is there a clear winner in it, Mike?
I don't know if there's a clear winner because it will depend on where Buffalo picks and who they pick. And if they end up getting McDavid, it's going to look great with McDavid playing a line with Kane. Just the thought of that is pretty outstanding. But in the short term, if I had to pick a winner, I would say the Jets won. Because if you look at Bogosian and Myers, that's a pretty even trade-off. I would say, if anything, Myers has a higher ceiling. And a prospect like Brendan Lemieux, he's a great prospect. He was the first pick in the second round. He's essentially a first-round pick. He is absolutely lighting it up with the Colts in the OHL. He's got 36 goals in 48 games. He's a very physical player, puts up 100-plus penalty minutes every single season. He's the type of guy that, based on how the Jets have been playing under Paul Maurice, he's a guy that will fit great into that system in theory. And they got a first-round pick as well that they can use as an asset to move up or pick up another piece here and there. Putting Tyler Myers, the top four D on the Jets are quite impressive. You know, you got Bufflin, Myers, Trouba, Enstrom. That's how you build a winner.
Guy like Mark Stewart, who's there as
you need those veteran guys as well.
Yep.
So in the short term, they pick up Drew Stafford, you know, might give him a couple goals down the stretch, help him get into the playoffs. I think the Jets, Kevin Cheveldayoff, for what was, I believe, his first trade as the Jets GM, which is kind of crazy, he did a great job. And, you know, on the other side of it, Murray in Buffalo, he got Evander Kane, who has 30-goal potential. It was a fair trade. It was a good trade. And other than Drew Stafford, all these players are under contract for at least the next 3 or 4 seasons as well, right?
Yes, yeah. I'll take the other side. I say Buffalo wins this deal for two reasons. They got the best player, and they got worse this year. Yeah. So as much as you hate it, Ben, I know they've got that much better a chance of staying in the bottom and being able to draft Connor McDavid. And then next fall, when Connor McDavid is passing the puck to Evander Kane, they're going to be a dynamic duo, something that the Jets won't have and they don't have now. And that's the one thing in Winnipeg is they don't have the game breaker that they need. And they've got a nice defense. They've got arguably the most underrated player in the NHL in Michael Hutchinson playing goal for them.
Yeah.
But they don't have the horses up front to, you know, break a game open or score that clutch goal when you need it the most. That was supposed to be Evander Kane. they need a Phil Kessel. How would you like trading Phil Kessel for like Josh Morrissey and Nick Pitan?
Sure.
Or take that first round pick that Winnipeg just got from Buffalo. It would look great. And Phil Kessel could be re-energized playing in playing in Winnipeg, playing in a playoff team.
Living in Winnipeg, though?
He might be cold. Well, Phil might be cold.
He might be cold.
Maybe he likes ice fishing.
Yeah.
Maybe he likes ice fishing.
I think he might like the media downgrade of going to Winnipeg as well.
Exactly.
Although that's the number one thing in that city.
That's a fishbowl in itself.
Yeah, but it's different than here.
It's not as many media in your face, but look what happened with Evander Kane in that town. Like, that is some intense media as well. Like, let's not forget that it's still hockey in a hockey-crazy city.
Yeah. They've got the Jets and the Bombers, and the Jets are a bigger deal.
I should hope so,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. CFL's big out west.
We'll get to CFL talk in a second. Just hold your horses. It is a hockey day in Canada on CBC and Sportsnet as well. I should mention it starts at noon on CBC. First game, Oilers, Senators on CBC and Sportsnet. Leafs, Habs, 7 o'clock. It is the Jets and Red Wings in Detroit on City. 10 o'clock game has the Canucks in Calgary. And then on Sportsnet, 1 at 10 o'clock as well. An All-American matchup. The Capitals in L.A. taking on those Kings as they try to get back into the playoffs in the Western Conference. When we come back, switch gears just a little bit. Exciting times in New York City this weekend. Got underway yesterday. NBA All-Star Weekend with the Celebrity Game, the Rising Stars Challenge, and Andrew Wiggins named MVP. This thing is coming to Toronto next year as well. Maybe we'll talk a little bit about that and what that could mean for the city. And we'll look back at the first half of the Raptors, look forward to what we can expect next season, and maybe what our thoughts are on tweaking NBA All-Star Weekend, including the concept of this one-on-one tournament, which I think would be awesome. All that and more coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside Mike Johnson and John Gregg on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sportsnet Magazine Live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Mike Johnson. This is the one of the new Drake tracks. You might want to turn on your microphone there, John.
From the Six.
Yeah, from the Six. Drake is, I mean, there's no doubt that Drake's going to be involved in that celebrity game when the NBA All-Star Game's in Toronto next year, right? Yeah, that's a no-brainer.
He will lint roll his way to an MVP. It's going to be outstanding.
Well, if Kevin Hart's not there, then it's a wide-open race, right?
He said he retired.
I know.
He won another MVP.
Going out as the champ. That's what you do. That's what you do.
Four-time MVP is Kevin Hart. Enough with Kevin Hart already, right? Like, I feel like that guy...
Dude got skilled by a 14-year-old girl,
yeah.
Right? Like, that's the highlight of All-Star Weekend right there. Like, it doesn't matter what else happens.
No, Monet Davis took him to the woodshed.
Like, sick. It was sick.
Yeah. She bodies him. Like, it starts with her backing him down and then spins around him.
Yeah, it's
She's
great.
She's 14.
Yep.
Supposedly.
She's also an actual athlete. And
Kevin that's
Hart's
true.
A comedian.
That's true.
Might have something to do with it.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, I guess. Saying. You look at it that way. So NBA All-Star Weekend continues from New York. You got the this skills competition today, which is, I think, the most fun part of it. We'll get to that in a second. Let's talk about the Raptors, though, with the break, who go into All-Star break at 36-17. 6.5 games back now at the Atlanta Hawks. It's not out of the realm of possibility, although the way the Hawks are playing, you would think it is. But who knows? Maybe they're not able to keep up that pace. But second is a nice spot right now. It would set up a first-round matchup with the Charlotte Hornets. It's that fourth spot you don't want to finish in because you're guaranteed one of Washington, Cleveland, or Chicago. Right now, it's setting up a first-round matchup of the Wizards and Cavaliers. And there was a point earlier in the season, gents, after that West Coast trip, and they played the Blazers tight in that overtime game, and they got smoked in Golden State, smoked in Phoenix, lost at home to Charlotte, barely beat the Celtics, and they were just playing poorly. That seems to be now in the rearview mirror of this team. They went on that winning streak against sub-500 teams, and here, headed into the break, they win three straight against the Clippers, Spurs, and Wizards. So are they back to, you know, good times and back to what we thought they were when they were off to that 13-2 start, Mike?
They're still not playing their best basketball right now, but they're playing much better than they were a month ago. DeMar's back. They're picking up wins. You know, they got to win it against the Spurs. That's a big deal, regardless of how terrible the Spurs, you know, shooting percentage was that game. They picked up the win. They beat the Clippers. These are good things. It was good for the Raptors to go through their struggles, their stumbles a few weeks ago when they did, you know, pre-All-Star break, because you don't want to be playing that way. And they're still turning the ball over a little too much for fans' liking. But you want to go through these growing pains pre-All-Star break as opposed to heading into the playoffs. And when you look at the Atlanta Hawks, they're playing outstanding. But really, how long can they keep that going? Are they peaking at this time of the season rather than peaking going into the playoffs?
I think the Hawks are more or less a lock for first in the conference. Now, I don't know that they're a lock to come out of the conference. I think that's a whole different ball of wax. My money's still on Cleveland. But, you know, Atlanta's got their nice 6.5 game cushion right now. And, you know, they're shooting the lights out. They're looking like a good team. Now, whether or not they can keep it going into the postseason is another question. But for me, the big thing with the Raps is the defense that they're playing, right? They're, you know, outside of that Brooklyn game where, granted, they only gave up, you know, 109 points, you know, they kept Washington to 93. They kept the Spurs to 82. They, you know, against the high-flying Clips, it was only 107. And, you know, before that, they couldn't score against Milwaukee, but they kept an 82 points. And that's a lot of DeMar. I think his defense is underrated. What he brings to that end of the court is definitely underrated. And the way he can slow a game down by getting to the line. They've worked him back in. They're all looking comfortable again. And Dwayne Casey is... he's cutting down on his rotation. It's down to like a 9-man rotation now, and it's still tightening up a bit. So I think this team is coming together, and it's what we saw at the beginning of the year is coming back again now.
And when you have guys like Johnson and Patterson healthy and getting minutes, it makes a huge difference. It really does. And having guys like that are good defensively is going to come in handy in the playoffs.
And those guys are interchangeable too, right? So I mean, when Amir comes out and Patterson goes in, where Johnson goes in, it's you're not losing anything.
Yeah,
right?
that's the strength of this Raptors roster.
Yeah.
Is
granted,
their
they could still, you know, if JV can really become like the man down the middle, that's going to help. But that's probably not this year. That's more down the road. That's next year and the year after.
Yeah, he's shown flashes for sure. And it's a different looking team with James Johnson in the starting five as well. Mention what's going on with the Maple Leafs, and it's another 3 to 5 year plan. So likely, you know, save for maybe getting Connor McDavid, they're going to be out in the wilderness for the next half a decade. We've already seen inroads made by the Raptors, I think, as far as tapping into the sports soul of this city. It's never going to be a national phenomenon like the Maple Leafs, frankly, are on hockey day, on hockey night in Canada. I mean, that's what drives the ratings numbers. It's the Toronto Maple Leafs, and you look at the numbers this year, it's in no small part to the Maple Leafs' decline down the standings. So they're never going to be, you know, big in Calgary are the Raptors. But as far as a Toronto entity, are they continuing to rise up the ranks? Like if you had to rank it, I guess right now would still be Maple Leafs 1, are the Blue Jays 2? Like, are they creeping up on the Blue Jays?
I would say Blue Jays are clearly 2. You know, the last few seasons they've, with all the big moves they've made, there's been a resurgence in fan support. Not that it was ever terribly low. With the Raptors, the main difference the last couple seasons is they've been winning. When the Raptors win, you know, for the Leafs, fans are going to watch the game, whether they're one of the worst teams in the league or in the playoffs. With the Raptors, you have a pretty large casual fan base that will hop on board when they're in the playoffs, and they'll head down to Maple Leaf Square and they'll watch the games when they know the Raptors are good and the games mean something. And if they can keep doing that, and by all indications, you look at their roster, you look at their young players, there's no reason why they shouldn't be a good team for the next 3 to 5 years.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, there's their stock in this city is only going to go up. They're clearly a top three team now in terms of fan support, and maybe they'll challenge the Blue Jays if they keep winning.
Yeah, I mean, it's a city star for a winner.
Yeah.
Nothing's been won here outside of a Grey Cup or two, and
there were some Grey Cups won?
I think so. And, you know, a couple of, you know, a nice run by the Toronto Rock and creating a lacrosse dynasty.
Has that season started?
Yes. Oh, okay. Yeah. But other than that, it's been since 94, right? So this team wants to, this city is starved for a winner, and they will get behind anybody who it'll be, if TFC comes out of the gates flying, the city will be behind TFC. So just, you know, win, baby, win, and you're going to create support. But there's also a cool ethos around this team. Starts with Masai Ujiri and works its way down, and that helps. They're a rebel team in the NBA, in pro sports in general, and it's fun and cool to get behind a team like that.
Yeah, it is. It's a fun team to watch, no question about it. It seems like they generally and genuinely like each other, everybody on that team. It doesn't seem like there's a malcontent.
Dave Zarum's got a great piece up on Sportsnet.ca right now talking about some behind-the-scenes stuff with the Raptors in terms of how they have cultivated a family atmosphere off the court with, you know, families and children and staff families and children. And it really does speak to the kind of culture that they're trying to create there. And it's been something that's happened since day one, but it's only in the past few years when a lot of these guys have had kids at the same time that you see all these guys coming together on and off the court.
It's amazing how they kind of just lucked into all of this as well, because we're just talking about, I don't know, 14 months ago that this team was right on the verge of getting ready to tank the season, trade away Kyle Lowry. They had already traded away Rudy Gay, and they were ready to make a play for Andrew Wiggins and that first overall pick.
It should scare Leaf fans. What if you trade Dion Phaneuf and Phil Kessel and they get better?
Right. Ugh. That's what I said. You can't mess with this losing chemistry. So, yes, it is NBA All-Star Weekend in New York City, Brooklyn, and Manhattan. And both those teams stink, the Nets and Knicks. But they get to see some good basketball players this weekend, which is good. Saw some yesterday with the Rising Stars Challenge. Andrew Wiggins winning MVP, and good on him, man. Like, the ton of pressure for a guy, not only first overall pick and coming off a Canadian first overall pick and Anthony Bennett, who was and is continuing to prove to be a bust and not worthy of that first overall pick, traded for Kevin Love, the hopes of a franchise pinned on him. And yeah, I guess a little bumps in the road. Guy's going to turn 20 at the end of this month, and already the numbers are right up there. He's gone one-on-one with LeBron as well in the matchups, and they haven't won those games, but he's looked pretty good. And
he didn't back down against LeBron in those games. He maybe tired out.
Yeah.
Which isn't surprising considering LeBron's more linebacker than he is, you know, small forward in the NBA. But I mean, Wiggins rose to the challenge there in a couple of those games, and I hate to tout the magazine again, but you know,
no, you don't. That's 2 hours about touting the magazine. What are you talking about?
Michael Grange has our cover story that's out this week on Wiggins, and he was in Minnesota and, you know, talked to Sam Mitchell, the always entertaining Sam Mitchell, about Wiggins. Talked to Wiggins, was there for that LeBron game, and he really gets into the fact that, you know, since Christmas, this guy, he's averaging more points per game than DeMar since Christmas. He's got, you know, three consecutive rookie players of the month. He is a legitimate rising star in this game, and it's not just because he's the best player on a crappy team. He's head and shoulders better than any other rookie in the league right now.
And this weekend, it's a great opportunity for him to get more exposure, because when he was traded to Minnesota, that's not a huge market.
No.
You know, he got kind of cast aside, and all the spotlight went on, oh, LeBron's back in Cleveland and everything, and he was sort of, you know, that half of the trade was kind of played second fiddle. So it's nice seeing him go out and have fun in this, you know, young stars game and get some exposure and be around the other superstars of the game this weekend, because he's clearly on his way to being one of those players. And it's a great opportunity. It's fun to see.
Yeah, future Raptor Andrew Wiggins. You wonder if the Cavs want to do over on that deal, the way that Kevin Love's kind of not fit in there. Imagine
he's
Andrew
picking
Wiggins
it up of late. Yeah, they're coming around that team. Oh, yeah. They are a scary team still, and it's not just because they have the best player on the planet.
No, they are definitely coming around. But, yeah, Love's been a little banged up. Had a scratched cornea, I believe, the other day. So mentioned it's All-Star Weekend with the Rising Stars game yesterday. Today's, I think, for most people, the most exciting part of All-Star Weekend. Who cares about the game tomorrow? You got the dunk contest. You got three-point competition. You got the whatever the hell they call the thing where the point guards run around pylons and stuff. Kyle Lowry's taking part in that today. I got caught in, it's the 15-year anniversary of that dunk contest in 2000. I got caught in a YouTube K-hole this week looking at that 2000 dunk contest with Vince Carter, the last great dunk contest, right? Like, there hasn't been a great one since. There's been some good dunks, like Jason Richardson through the legs dunk. I can think of a few. Dwight Howard had a couple. And you know what? John Wall had a few. And Nate Robinson in there as well. I mean, just your juices get flowing for NBA Saturday weekend there, Mike?
You know, they do. I'm not the kind of guy. I don't watch NBA every night of the week. I'll tune into a couple, you know, a few games a month. I pay attention to the Raptors and everything. But it, also, a little plug, go to sportsnet.ca's NBA section and look at, yesterday I put together.
Don't apologize for this plug, by the way.
The greatest moments in dunk contest history.
Yeah.
And so you can relive all the great moments from Vince Carter, Michael Jordan, Spud Webb, just his hops are legendary. And you get to see all these things and you just watch these clips. And that's why people get excited about this weekend, because we can see, you know, Zach LaVine, a Wiggins teammate, another potential superstar. He's going to be throwing stuff down tonight and fans are going to go crazy.
He's the one that I'm excited to watch out
exactly.
of all of them, right?
You know, like, it doesn't really matter who wins the dunk contest, you know, because the scoring is skewed and the guys are throwing up 50s all the time when it's like, no, that's not a 50. What are you doing? You know, so I questioned the judges. We should have an inquisition on the judge. No, I'm just kidding. But the great thing about tonight is we're going to see Zach LaVine probably do something we've never seen. This is what people are saying. And also, to go along with the dunk contest, this 3-point contest with Steph Curry and James Harden and Kyle Korver, it's such a stacked field. And that is kind of the equivalent of the NHL's hardest shot. And people get excited for it. It's fun. Even if you're not the biggest basketball fan, the All-Star Weekend is kind of fun, even though the game itself is silly.
I just hope that the dunk contest gets away from all the gimmicks. You know, I'm of a certain vintage. And, you know, I remember...
You're old. You're the oldest man in the room. You're so old.
Yeah, I know. I remember Michael Jordan. I remember Dominique. I remember Sean Kemp. I remember Spud Webb. I remember those epic dunk contest,
throwing it down with force, no
with
case.
Force, with style, with pizzazz. You know, it was the best players in the game who were doing it. They weren't wearing capes, they weren't jumping over cars,
yeah.
They weren't blindfolding themselves. They were just putting out sick moves. And I understand why players don't always want to do the dunk contest anymore and participate, but I do hope that, you know, LaVine comes in and just does something that is just so athletic that you're like, wow. And he doesn't do it with, like, you know, a helmet on or something. Like, just go out and dunk. Yeah. That's what the fans want to see.
Yeah.
D Brown in 91 with the Celtics, kind of, he took showmanship to a new level. And that, you know, has influenced the guys today where, you know, Nate Robinson, Paul Pierce has a cardboard cutout of Nate Robinson. And then they actually bring Nate Robinson in for Gerald Green to dunk over and everything. And those things are fun. But getting back to the basics, just have these crazy freak athletes show their skills, show their reach, show their creativity without being gimmicky. Just throw it down. Just do a good, excellent two-handed windmill dunk and throw it down with force like Dominique Wilkins. And fans will go crazy. They'll really appreciate that.
Yep. And you know, granted, some of the guys probably think they're running out of dunks. I mean, this has been going on for a long time, this contest. How many dunks can you do, really? You can't. It's hard to come up with something new. But I think you're right, Mike. You can just go old school and just do it right.
Yeah.
And you can still wow everybody. Is somebody going to take off from the foul line again?
Yeah.
When's that going
to
happen?
Watch for Zach LaVine to do that tonight. There's rumors that he, and the leaping ability this guy has, he could be one of those guys that could land.
He was certainly looking sick last night.
Oh, I mean, you see clips, YouTube clips of him in high school dunk contests, and he's doing things that most great NBA players can't do today.
Yeah, looking forward to that. And that 3-point competition, Marco Bellinelli, Steph Curry, James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kyle Korver, who's shooting over 50% from three, which is ridiculous. Wesley Matthews, JJ Redick, don't forget about his 3-point ability, and Klay Thompson, man. That's a stacked lineup. So you get the stars out for that competition, the 3-point competition. We haven't really seen the stars out for the dunk contest in a while, and people have thrown out, you know, what would be a great idea is you throw $10 million at center court and winner the dunk contest gets the $10 million. I think you'd have to have a more stringent judging policy if that were the case. But that would make the dunk contest interesting, no question about it. This idea of a one-on-one tournament, you know, maybe you play to three with 1 point available with each bucket, and winner keeps the ball, and you play like a little mini bracket tournament. It's something that I think would just be unbelievable. Steph Curry, man, would you like to go one-on-one against Kevin Durant? And he said,
exactly.
Yeah. Would you win? He's like, yeah, if I got the ball first. Because, of course, he can make a shot from anywhere. I mean, how unbelievable would that be, a one-on-one tournament at All-Star Weekend, Mike?
It would be fantastic. These guys, you know, they don't. When these stars grow up playing ball, they're not always playing five-on-five in an organized game. They're playing street ball. They're shooting it around with their friends. They're playing one-on-one with the kids in their neighborhood. And, you can try new things. You can cross a guy up. If you make a guy stumble and break his ankles, as the kids say, it's a point of pride you get. And watching elite players one-on-one, it's a different element than you would get seeing Wiggins go up against LeBron in a five-on-five situation. You get a different dynamic if Durant and anyone else goes one-on-one.
You're right. You're going to get individuals who are pro athletes and competitors who don't want to look bad. And it's one thing to not play defense in an All-Star game when it's 5-on-5. It's another thing to get, bodied by LeBron James in a one-on-one game.
Yeah, if you get burned one-on-one, that's going to play with their egos. And a lot of these guys at the top level of the NBA, they have egos. Yep.
That's why you got to put money on the line, man.
Exactly. Hey, you could have a sick tournament too. Like everybody plays to 11 in a March Madness bracket style. So it would be awesome.
Yeah. And these guys would want to do that. You see in the NHL, guys like Crosby and others, they don't necessarily want to participate in the weekend because they want to heal up and rest. But if you offer something like this to the guys in the NBA,
I'm kind of with John though a little bit that they don't want to be embarrassed. But if you put some money on the line, I think.
Money would help, sure, and give a little bit to charity as well while you're at it, right?
Yeah.
But these guys' egos, their competitive drive, I think, would show in that environment, a one-on-one.
Plus,
tournament. It's
like schoolyard stuff. It takes you back to your roots, right? Like you can't do that in the NHL, and I don't want to get into the deplorable product that is the NHL All-Star Game. But it doesn't take you back to your roots to play 2-on-2 or 1-on-1, right?
Yeah,
like whereas basketball, that's like kind of how you grow up.
The Winter Classic, I think, probably does that to better effect.
Sure, yeah.
In the NHL with the outdoor aspect of that. When we come back, we will switch gears, go back to the National Hockey League. It is Hockey Day in Canada in Halifax, and some scary stuff over the last couple of days going on in Halifax. So hopefully everybody stays safe there today. It looks like all those threats have been thwarted, and a great job by Halifax police. But we will talk about the seven Canadian teams as we head into Hockey Day in Canada. Of course, all in action, including three all-Canadian matchups. We'll have a look at those, and maybe, if we have time, Mike will talk CFL in Fort McMurray.
Maybe. Don't get my hopes up.
Okay.
We got to do it.
All right, fine. Okay, John's promising it. I'm not promising it. John is. All that and more coming up next. This is Sportsnet Magazine Live. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Grigg and Mike Johnson on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
With a taste of what's inside the current issue of Sportsnet Magazine, here's Dave Zirum.
You spend time with your family?
Sure I do.
Good. Because a man that doesn't spend time with his family can never be a real man.
Easy there, Godfather. You don't need to tell the Toronto Raptors about the importance of family. That's because, with the majority of the players and coaches either newly married or with young children in tow, there's never been a bigger family presence on this team. But there's more to it than that. The franchise has worked hard to create an inclusive, welcoming atmosphere for the players and their families. And it all starts with the Raps Team Services Department, who go above and beyond the call of duty to help acclimate new players to the city and ensure that familiar faces are looked after. On previous teams, Dwayne Casey would urge his wife Brenda to stay out of the family room. That's where problems start, he'd tell her. Well, you won't hear that from the Raptors, not this season at least. So join us as we go behind the scenes with the Raptors' friends, family, and the support group that's helping them find success on and off the court. Because if there's one thing the Raptors are proving, it's that family matters. We'll make you happy.
more appears in the latest edition of Sportsnet magazine, available on Next Issue and in the Apple Newsstand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Sportsnet Magazine Live, Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Ben Ennis alongside John Gregg and Mike Johnson. It's hockey day in Canada, people. Get excited. If you like hockey, just tune your TV to CBC and rip the knob off. Your TV has a knob. I guess they don't make TVs with knobs.
You're calling
anymore.
Me old, man?
Yeah. I was actually reminiscing with people over at Sportsnet yesterday about, you know, the days of the VCR and Rogers video and how you had to have, at least we had, a separate rewinding machine because you didn't want to mess up your VCR by rewinding it. And you get charged if you didn't rewind your video. It was such a pain in the ass when you had to get a video that wasn't rewound. Anyways, I digress. It starts at noon on CBC. First game, 2 o'clock in Ottawa, Oilers and Senators. Then at 7 o'clock, original six matchup in Montreal, Canadiens, Maple Leafs. 10 o'clock game on CBC has the Canucks in Calgary, the other Canadian team, Winnipeg Jets in Detroit at 7 o'clock. That's on City as well. All this going down, the broadcast in Halifax. All right, so we already spent the good portion of an hour, last hour, talking about the Maple Leafs, so maybe we'll leave them out of it. But let's look at the other Canadian teams, the other six in the National Hockey League, and maybe we should start with the team that is playing the Maple Leafs tonight at 7 o'clock. At home, Montreal Canadiens at this point through 54 games, 35-15-4, 74 points, tied with the Lightning atop the Eastern Conference, and Habs have 3 games in hand on Tampa Bay. We know Carey Price is having a ridiculous season. This is a team that, Mike, last year was in the Eastern Conference final. I mean, are they improved from that? Is this are we talking about a cup contender at this point?
There's no reason why they couldn't get to another East final. The only thing is the Eastern Conference as a whole this season is stronger than it was last season. Last season, you know, Washington wasn't really much of a factor. The Islanders were not a factor. They certainly are this year. The Canadiens, it is pretty simple. They'll go as far as Carey Price takes them. They don't rely solely on Carey Price, but they allow the fewest goals per game in the entire NHL, yet they don't score too many goals. So they, you know, they're offensive guys. Maybe they'll look to pick up a rental player, a decent forward that could help them out up front at the trade deadline. They need to just balance out their scoring a little bit, and not just, they have to make sure they don't rely too much on Carey Price, because if Carey Price goes down, their hopes, you know, go out the window. Where there are other teams where if they lost a goalie, you know, they might not be, it might not be as big a stumbling block.
Yeah, if Carey Price goes down, that team's screwed, period.
Yep. Yeah. Period. Over.
But, you know, in my money, you know, we've got a couple actually articles up on sportsnet.ca right now about it, but Max Pacioretty, you know, I said earlier that Michael Hutchinson might be the most underrated player in the NHL. Max Pacioretty might be the most underrated winger in the NHL. I mean, he's on pace for pretty much for almost 40 goals. He's a power forward. He's a beast to handle. And he doesn't play with anybody of note, which I think is important to note. When you're talking about guys like David Desharnais as your center, and you can still go about and hit 40 goals, I mean, you are a true sniper in this league. And when you're, I think he's 6'3", 210 or something like that too, he's got big size and he uses it. He goes to the net, he plays hard, and he's the kind of guy you can lean on in the playoffs, I think, as well.
Yeah, you know, Pacioretty isn't necessarily viewed as an elite sniper the way, you know, Kessel should be, or Malkin and Seguin and Rick Nash, Ovechkin. But if you look at his numbers, and he is consistent as well over the last few years, you know, he is a first-line player. The strength of the Habs roster is their depth and the way they can put 3 or even 4 really quality lines out on the ice every night.
Yeah, those lines can't score, but they don't get scored upon,
yes,
which is a good start.
Exactly, right? But Max Pacioretty is one of the game-breaking guys
yep.
that they have.
You know. John, I know you love your fancy stats, and I know this won't come as a surprise to you. The Canadians are number one in PDO, the National Hockey League,
well,
this
that's,
season.
Yeah, well, they're when you've got your number one goalie has a .933 save percentage, that's going to be a big help to that for sure.
Yeah, it's and they're also shooting at just over 9% as well. So maybe some unsustainability there, but I don't know. Maybe you just got a good goalie, which is can't fault a team for having a good goalie. Which the Montreal Canadiens definitely do have. Let's stay in the Atlantic Division. The Ottawa Senators went through a coaching change this year. Paul McLean out the door, and certainly in a rebuilding phase as well. Just 2 points up on the Maple Leafs, although they do have 3 games in hand. So kind of going through a different phase of their development, what do we make of the Senators and their 21-22-10 record at this point, John?
I think it sucks to be a Sens fan right now. I think they're kind of in that like in between stage. They're waiting for Mika Zibanejad to develop into what everybody thinks he can be. Curtis Lazar, Robin Lehner. They need the guys who are already on the team to take the next step. They don't. There isn't a ton in junior or in the minors for these guys right now that you can be excited about. So and the AHL team's brutal. So it's really about developing the guys who are on your roster right now. And they're doing a good job of that because they're getting a lot of ice time. They're playing, right? And I think the big question for me surrounding the Sens right now is, do they move Craig Anderson? Is he the kind of guy that you can move for some good future pieces?
It would be, I'm sure they're looking into that. There's no reason why they shouldn't be looking into that. If you think Leonard's the guy to lead you going forward, Craig Anderson isn't the same goalie he was a couple seasons ago when he had some of the best numbers in the league.
I think he's up there with like a .928 right now or something. Like, he's not the problem in Ottawa, that's for sure.
He's not the problem, but going forward the next few years, he's not really the solution. He's not getting any younger. And like you said, they do have some good young pieces. Mike Hoffman's having an excellent season. Kyle Turris, good young center. You don't want him to be your number one center necessarily. Curtis Lazar, an up-and-coming guy. They have some pieces, but they are in that middle range where you'd think they might have an outside chance at the playoffs at the start of the season, and yet they find themselves where they are right now.
Yeah, the problem with them is they were too good for a couple years where they weren't supposed to be, and they were making playoffs, and it was costing them draft picks, right? And
yeah, they were the surprise of the NHL just a couple of years ago.
It's that perennial cycle of mediocrity that certain fans in certain cities have become accustomed to.
Speaking of surprises, a couple of Canadian teams are surprises out west. And I don't know, I guess I throw the Jets into the surprise category, even though, you know, it's not like they're in a rebuilding phase or anything. It's just they haven't been in the playoffs yet since moving to Winnipeg from Atlanta. And maybe that's a good team to start with. The Jets currently sitting on 66 points through 57 games at 28-19-10. They're in one of those wild card spots in the Western Conference. A pretty good gap on the teams on the outside looking in as well. And they made headlines, of course, with the Evander Kane deal. They get a little better on the back end, we think, with Tyler Myers, although maybe that's a chip that they flip. And I think, John, honestly, like maybe the biggest reason for the improved play this season is goaltending.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've mentioned Hutchinson a couple times, and he has played outstanding. I think he's first in the league in adjusted save percentage. His numbers are...
This is a new one for me. Adjusted save percentage. Adjusted save percentage. You love the fancy stats. I do too. I like learning, so teach me.
Okay,
me
adjusted save percentage is when you take the league average for what goalies face from high-scoring areas, medium-scoring areas, and low-scoring areas. So a guy like Jonathan Bernier is top 10 in adjusted save percentage because he makes a lot of saves on high-opportunity shots because the Leafs give up so many. And Hutchinson, when you put him across the league and take the average, he's the top guy in the league.
150 feet is like a low opportunity scoring
yes.
position, right?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Yes.
Right. Just verifying.
But yeah, but I think the Jets, you know, for all the flack that Cheveldayoff takes for being, you know, the Stan Pat of the NHL, he's doing it right. They're building. They've got some great young players on that team now. They've got guys like Nikolai Ehlers, who's, you know, tearing the Quebec League apart and, you know, did really well at the World Juniors on a relatively weak Swiss team. And, you know, they've got up-and-comers. Josh Morrissey, we mentioned. Nick Batan, we mentioned earlier. names that Canadian hockey fans know now because of the way they've shone on the international stage. And those guys are still coming to a team that now has, you know, Jacob Trouba and Tyler Myers and others. So, I mean, they're doing, if they make the playoffs this year, even if they bow out in the first round, that's a great developmental leap for them. And it sets the tone and a stage for the next wave of young Jets who come in.
And you have to give Paul Maurice credit as well. This team, for all the stuff that happened with Kane, it seems like a very tight-knit group, and they kind of cast aside somebody that was ruffling the feathers a bit. And they have chemistry on the ice as well, clearly. They play an excellent team game. They don't rely on just one line or their power play or anything like that. So it's refreshing to see, but as you mentioned earlier, goaltending is the biggest difference. Mm-hmm. I don't think many predicted Hutchinson to have such a great season like he is now. A lot of people thought Pavlich would be the starter, and the last few seasons his numbers have not been very good. So that's the main factor for sure.
Hutchinson could be the rookie of the year. I mean, yeah. I know it's Forsberg and Ekblad that everybody talk about, but I mean, Hutchinson is really
the most valuable player on that team. You know, you could certainly make that argument at least.
Yep. Yep. I mean, and they're playing him more now, and you know, Pavlich still has more starts and games played, but I mean, that cycle is coming to an end. They need Pavlich to be better because of his cap hit, but they can't sit on Hutchinson any longer.
And we see this all the time with teams. When you have a goalie in the crease that your team has confidence in, they do play differently.
Yep.
Yeah, it's completely out of nowhere as well. Signed in July of 2013 by the Jets, originally drafted in the third round by the Boston Bruins in 2008. Let's look at some other Western Conference teams. And I mentioned the two surprises probably of the entire season in all of the NHL are the Jets and the Calgary Flames. The Flames were supposed to be one of those teams in the McDavid sweepstakes. And it's amazing what a couple of good defensemen can do. I mean, Mark Giordano and TJ Brody are among the best in the National Hockey League and doing a great job on the back end there. Johnny Hockey has people excited, but also goaltending is a big factor in Calgary as well. They're getting some good goaltending, Mike.
Yeah, it really can make all the difference. It can make an average team a playoff team. And that's kind of what we're seeing with the Calgary Flames. But, you know, it's not just about goaltending with this team. Among all the Canadian teams, the Calgary Flames average the highest number of goals per game. And it's pretty remarkable to hear that when no player on their team averages more than a point per game. Mark Giordano, a defenseman, leads their team with 44 points in 55 games, and yet they're one of the higher scoring teams in the entire league. They're in the top half in that category. So a balanced attack like we're seeing in Calgary, and they play a hard-nosed style of game. They don't really have the enforcers or anything like that, but they're a tough team to play against.
Yeah, I'm still not sold on the Flames myself. I mean, and I don't want to go back to numbers or whatever, because you're right. They are showing a plucky game that is exciting for fans to see, and that they're showing that you can actually rebuild on the fly. But this is a team that, you know, I think they're minus 124 in shots. They're like bottom five in the league.
Third in PDO in the NHL.
Third in PDO. So their, you know, save percentage is high and their shooting percentage is probably off the charts. So I don't, and also the teams that are chasing them for the playoffs, Minnesota Wild on a run, that's a good team. And
very good defensive team.
And it looks like they found a goalie to play in that system for the first time this year. LA Kings, you know, they've played a lot of hockey over the past 3 or 4 years, and they're used to kind of coasting through the regular season and not having to worry about putting the pedal to the metal until round one. Obviously, they're going to have to pick up the pace in the final 20-25 games here, but I still see those two teams as getting past Calgary and getting into the wild card spots, or at least one of them.
Yeah, the Calgary Flames, with their shooting percentage of 10.5%, second in the National Hockey League, only to the Tampa Bay Lightning.
And you know, there's something to be said for that too. There's something to be said for being a quick strike team that takes, yeah, an opportunistic team. It's just, you know, the old word, is it sustainable? I don't think so, especially when you don't have that kind of top tier talent like you were talking about, Mike. I mean, yes, the defensemen are there who can lead from the blue line, but you don't have the game breaker. You don't have the guy who can score when you need one, right?
There's in some ways they're similar to Colorado last year in the sense that they're a very opportunistic team, Colorado, on the other hand, has a lot of these great offensive stars that the Flames lack.
Yeah, and you need, you know, and Flames fans in Calgary right now, I'm sure, are saying, well, where's Colorado in the standings? And they're right. I mean, you can't just be an opportunistic team, and it's that kind of play that comes back to bite you. You can't rely on uber good goaltending and a bunch of guys to score at a 10% shooting percentage. You just can't.
They did it for 82 games and then a little bit of the playoffs last year as well, though. So maybe it lasts the whole season for Calgary.
But that's been like the Leafs problem for years, right?
Yes.
And I don't want to talk about them anymore, though.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, got a couple more teams to get to here in the last couple of minutes. Vancouver finally snaps its streak of going win one, lose one since the All-Star break as they beat the Bruins 5-2 yesterday. That cup final was now what, 2011? Man, seems like it was just yesterday. But
if I'm a Vancouver Canucks fan, like, I'm really worried right now.
Yeah.
Because I see them as being a, you know, they're an aging roster who are locked into like battling for a 7-8 spot, maybe 9, maybe 10, never getting a draft pick. You know, they've got a bunch of older guys locked into long-term deals. You can see them falling into that trap of never quite being good enough again, but also never being bad enough to pick high. And it'll be hard to get out of it. You know, you've got Ryan Miller there. It's not an uber long contract, but how can you move a goalie if he's not playing well and he's a high price guy? You're probably never going to trade the Sedins unless somebody knocks your socks off and they decide they want to go. You're into that kind of no man's land of never getting better.
But if you're at least right now, they're in a position where they're in a no man's land where they're going to make the playoffs. And maybe, you know, if they win a series, it might surprise some people, but I don't think Canucks fans would be upset with that. Also, I'd like to give a shout out to Sean Mathias. He got a hat trick last night. We're old high school buddies, played dodgeball together in
his
gym
first
class.
I believe, right?
Really?
I think it was his.
Who's had a more successful life, you or him?
Well, come on now.
All right. Yeah, it's obvious.
With the ladies, it's Mikey J for sure.
Valentine's Day.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We forgot to mention that. Happy Valentine's Day. As Greg took a nice selfie, you can see it on Twitter. And finally, the Edmonton Oilers, at least they win the occasional hockey game now. So that's a step in the right direction.
Do they,
final
though?
Minute. Okay. Yeah, they're 5-5 in their last 10.
Well, that's better.
Riding a one-game winning streak. Beat Montreal on Thursday.
That's all they can hope for, a one-game win streak. Very much like the Leafs. They are kind of tanking organically. They're just that they have to make some big off-season moves, and it will depend heavily on where they get, where they end up picking, because I don't see them keeping Yakupov. Maybe they deal a guy like Eberle. They're going to have to make some one or two big moves in the off-season, and at least they'll have yet another very high draft pick to work
with. If they get a top two pick, they can affect real change real fast.
Yeah.
If they're outside of that top two and they, you know, then they're in trouble, I think, because you're going to be trading Taylor Hall. You're going to be trading Jordan Eberle. And, you know, you're not going to get that kind of skill back. You're going to get depth guys. And the worst thing, if I'm in Edmonton, is when I see Devin Dubnyk playing lights out in Minnesota. It's like, yeah. Oh man, we thought he sucked, you know, and our team has the worst save percentage in the league right now. Victor Fast sucks. Ben Scriven sucks. Well, guess what? Sometimes these guys get run out of town and it's not their fault.
They were good before they got to Edmonton.
Play some D in front of these guys and you never know what you got. But I mean, it's so thin in Edmonton outside of a few forwards that, you know, it's tough there, and you're going to have to really add a lot of depth and try and find guys who want to come and play for your team.
And finally, some CFL talk. Oh, no, we're out of time. Out of time.
Come on.
Unbelievable.
Sorry, Mikey.
No, we got to do it.
That's all.
No, we're out of time. No. I'm not kidding around.
Well, let's stick around.
Yeah, you guys can stick around. I'll be here for another hour. Thanks a lot, gents.
We'll do a CFL hour.
Do killer ratings. Thanks for coming in on Valentine's Day. There's no two gents I'd rather be with.
My wife needed a break today, so.
Yeah.
Guys, I loved doing this on Valentine's Day.
Say what you did.
I hurt you too, Mikey.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, this has been Sportsnet Magazine Live with John Gregg and Mike Johnson. I'm Ben Annis on the Sportsnet Radio Network.